Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 412, titled, The Engineer Intends to Wreck the Train. This is being recorded on June 2nd of the year 2003, and before we get into the substance of the broadcast, all of the For the Record programs and the other shows I've done over the years are available from Spitfire, one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005, email, mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com, and you can visit the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Within a week or so, certainly within 2 weeks at the most, there will be a detailed article-length annotated description of For the Record 412 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. Older programs are available for download only at a longer URL linked both to the spitfirelist.com website and to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website. Now, to For the Record 412, the title is a phrase that I have used several times in the past, alluding to the Bush administration, which I believe very firmly to be the point element of a Third Reich gone underground. And I believe that at one level, the war on terror and the engagement of the U.S. in a very economically costly war against various peoples of what then the Third Reich referred to as the Earth Island, and the slashing of federal revenues at the same time as there was an enormous increase in expenditures in order to fight this very same war, I believe that this is aimed at the destruction and or subjugation of the United States. And I would note in that context that Grover Norquist, a key element of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, is not only the point man for the Al-Qaeda / Al-Taqwa Muslim Brotherhood link to the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization. That was exposed in the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids that were instigated by the heroic John Loftus in his lawsuit against Sami Al-Arian. But those very same Operation Green Quest raids are inextricably linked with a system in which money, vast sums of money, is permitted to flow between countries in an unregulated fashion. And the aforementioned Grover Norquist, in addition to being the point man for the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood link to the Republican Party, is also the point man for the tax slashing for the Republican administration. He is one of the individuals, along with the Machiavellian and very much to be feared Karl Rove, whom I believe to be point men for the Bormann Organization and the Underground Reich in this administration. I have alluded to the combination of engaging the U.S. in a very costly war against the population of the Earth Island, a war which has again necessitated an enormous military buildup, at the same time as revenues are being slashed. And I have stated that I believe the engineer intends to wreck the train. I think that if, in fact, the United States is not destroyed physically and to a certain extent physically and economically by some monster terrorist incident, say a dirty bomb or the sabotaging of a nuclear power plant or some such thing, that would certainly cause an economic collapse in this country. I believe that a combination of building up the military to fight this perhaps perpetual or certainly long-term war in the Earth Island, and the combination of slashing the budget will destroy the United States, and that at some point in the future the United States, if indeed it even remains a single nation, if perhaps we are destroyed, I would not be surprised to see the South secede again successfully at some point in the future, perhaps the Pacific Northwest as well. But at the very least, we will be a subjugated nation. We will be completely bankrupted, and we will become, in effect, a source of cheap labor for Germany and a tree farm for Japan at some point in the future. That is why I have used the phrase in the past, the engineer intends to wreck the train. In this broadcast, we're going to be taking a look at economic considerations. We're going to be taking a look at the Bush administration's catastrophic and, in my opinion, deliberately suicidal tax cuts. We're going to be taking a look at some aspects of not only the war on terror, but in particular, the situation in Iraq. And as I've stated in the past, I believe we were lured into a trap in Iraq. Who knows how it's ultimately going to work out? We won't know for another 8 to 10 years, both in terms of the Middle East and domestically. But there are indications that the invasion of Iraq is spurring Islamic fundamentalism, and it remains to be seen exactly what happens in the future. But I think in some ways, the decision to go ahead with military action in Iraq may turn out to be a military decision along the lines of what Hitler made when he decided to invade the Soviet Union and open up a two-front war against the advice of his best generals. We have opened up a second front in the war on terror, and Saddam Hussein, a secular Arabo-fascist, like the Islamo-fascists of the Al-Qaeda Al-Taqwa milieu, have documented connections to the underground Reich. I would note that in For the Record program 391, and the description for that on the web at spitfirelist.com, I have given a detailed and intense synopsis of the work that I've done on September 11th and related topics. And I would also note that For the Record 305 has the distilled text of the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. For the Record 273 and 370 deal with the Bush administration's connections to the Bormann milieu. There's also a detailed professional biography of Paul Manning, who did the seminal work on the Bormann organization. And I would note also that some of the articles by the brilliant Kevin Coogan, his article on Ahmed Huber, a sidebar to the Ahmed Huber article about Ahmed Huber and the Avalon Gemeinschaft, and a very important article called Report on Islamists and the Far Right, are available at a website that is titled Oracle Syndicate. It's a website devoted to a number of Kevin Coogan's articles, and I refer listeners to those articles. Ahmed Huber, by the way, is a protege of, among others, Johann von Leers, who later converted to Islam, as did Ahmed Huber. Johann von Leers was in charge of anti-Semitic propaganda for Goebbels' propaganda ministry. He then took charge under Nasser's Egypt of the Institute for the Study of Zionism. And I would note that when Martin Bormann left the Führer bunker during the siege of Berlin at the end of World War II, Martin Bormann left with a Nazi leader named Arthur Oxmann, who was the only eyewitness to the supposed death of Martin Bormann. And in addition to Oxmann, the other person who left with Martin Bormann, sort of the three musketeers of the underground Reich, was Johann von Leers. So if some of the things that I'm saying sound utterly crazy, I can appreciate that they're unusual, but the documentation is there. And Huber's mentor was one of the two people who left the Führer bunker with Martin Bormann. Again, the website titled Oracle Syndicate, do a Google search on that, and or Kevin Coogan. His seminal article about Ahmed Huber, the sidebar article about the Avalon Gemeinschaft and Ahmed Huber, and Report on Islamists in the Far Right are available on the World Wide Web. And again, For the Record, 273, 370, the description for 305, and For the Record, 391, plus the biography of Paul Manning, are all on the Spitfire website. So again, if some of this sounds really unusual, incredible, what have you, check out the documentation, and I think that will provide you with a foundation that will enable your understanding of some of the things that I'm going to talk about. Now, to the subject material of this program, to the documentation, bear in mind that the phrase that I've used in the past, that is the title of this program, the engineer intends to wreck the train. If that sounds paranoid, listen to the following. This is from the New York Times of May 27th of 2003. This is a column by Paul Krugman, the economics professor from Princeton University, who is the New York Times economic columnist. It's titled, Stating the Obvious. And I think listeners will recognize a resonance between Paul Krugman's frightening but insightful column, in turn referencing some editorial comment by the Financial Times, and some of the things that I've had to say in recent weeks about the engineer intending to wreck the train. Krugman, stating the obvious, reads as follows, quote, "The lunatics are now in charge of the asylum," unquote. So wrote the normally staid Financial Times, traditionally the voice of solid British business opinion when surveying last week's tax bill. Indeed, the legislation is doubly absurd. The gimmicks used to make an $800 billion-plus tax cut carry an official price tag of only $320 billion, and they are a joke. Yet the cost without the gimmicks is so large that the nation can't possibly afford it while keeping its other promises. But then maybe that's the point. The Financial Times suggests that, quote, more extreme Republicans, unquote, actually want a fiscal train wreck. Quote, "Proposing to slash federal spending, particularly on social programs, is a tricky electoral proposition, but a fiscal crisis offers the tantalizing prospect of forcing such cuts through the back door," unquote. Good for the Financial Times. It seems that stating the obvious has now finally become respectable. It's no secret that right-wing ideologues want to abolish programs Americans take for granted. But not long ago, to suggest that the Bush administration's policies might actually be driven by those ideologues, that the administration was deliberately setting the country up for a fiscal crisis in which popular social programs could be sharply cut, was to be accused of spouting conspiracy theories. Yet by pushing through another huge tax cut in the face of record deficits, the administration clearly demonstrates either that it is completely feckless, or that it actually wants a fiscal crisis, or maybe both. Here's one way to look at the situation. Although you wouldn't know it from the rhetoric, federal taxes are already historically low as a share of gross domestic product. Once the new round of tax cuts takes effect, federal taxes will be lower than their average during the Eisenhower administration. How, then, can the government pay for Medicare and Medicaid, which didn't exist in the 1950s, and Social Security, which will become far more expensive as the population ages? Defense spending has fallen compared with the economy, but not that much, and it's on the rise again. The answer is that it can't. The government can borrow to make up the difference as long as investors remain in denial, unable to believe that the world's only superpower is turning into a banana republic. But at some point, bond markets will balk. They won't lend money to a government, even that of the United States, if that government's debt is growing faster than its revenues, and there is no plausible story about how the budget will eventually come under control. At that point, either taxes will go up again or programs that have become fundamental to the American way of life will be gutted. We can be sure that the right will do whatever it takes to preserve the Bush tax cuts. Right now, the administration is even skimping on Homeland Security to save a few dollars here and there. But balancing the books without tax increases will require deep cuts where the money is, that is, in Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. The pain of these benefit cuts will fall on the middle class and the poor, while the tax cuts overwhelmingly favor the rich. For example, the tax cut passed last week will raise the after-tax income of most people by less than 1%. Not nearly enough to compensate them for the loss of benefits. But people with incomes over $1 million per year will, on average, see their after-tax income rise 4.4%. The Financial Times suggests this is deliberate, and I agree. Quote, "For them," it says of those extreme Republicans, quote, "undermining the multilateral international order is not enough. Long-held views on income distribution also require radical revision," unquote. How can this be happening? Most people, even most liberals, are complacent. They don't realize how dire the fiscal outlook really is, and they don't read what the ideologues write. They imagine that the Bush administration, like the Reagan administration, will modify our system only at the edges. That it won't destroy the social safety net built up over the past 70 years. But the people now running America aren't conservatives. They're radicals who want to do away with the social and economic system we have, and the fiscal crisis they are concocting may give them the excuse they need. The Financial Times, it seems, now understands what's going on. But when will the public wake up? Indeed, there is a term here which has yet to be used by Paul Krugman, and I don't think you'll see him use it, at least any time in the near future. These people are radicals. They are right-wing radicals. But the people who are running this administration are fascists. And what is happening at one level is the descent of the United States into fascism. At another level, it is being used, the Bush administration is being used to destroy the infrastructure of the United States, and we are indeed becoming a banana republic, and we will become a satellite country of the underground Reich if we continue on our present course. Again, note the specific phrase used by Paul Krugman and by the Financial Times. These people intend to produce a fiscal train wreck. And as I've noted in the past, a major terrorist incident may very well accentuate flight capital from the United States and reduce direct net foreign investment. A combination of terrorism or the threat of terrorism and the fiscal train wreck being engineered by this administration will do just that. And I would note again the passivity of the public. And I would note that I don't see any real signs that we're going to wake up. I remember with considerable bitterness the 2000 election and the psychotic perception being disseminated by elements of the so-called progressive sector that there was no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, in particular the Naderoids. History should record that in the 2000 election, the American people had a choice between a fascist and between fascism and between a moderate social democrat and social democracy, and that the so-called progressive sector, the Naderoids, and Chairman Ralph himself, old shoplifter face, said that there was no difference between fascism and social democracy. It is not humanly possible to be any more wrong than that, and ultimately the social and the spiritual legacy of those who made that mistake. And remember the institutions that disseminated the views of the Naderoids, because they have some very heavy karma indeed. They had a chance to stop Hitler in the 1932 election, but they concluded that there was no difference between the Nazis and the Social Democrats. Remember and pay them back. Another terrifying article, which is in opposition to the article that I just read from the New York Times, this appeared in the Financial Times 2 days after that article appeared in the New York Times. This is from the Financial Times of Thursday, May 29th of 2003. And this deals with a report that was suppressed by the Bush administration. This report was commissioned by former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, whose firing in December of 2002 I discussed in For the Record Program 390. I would note that it was also former Treasury Secretary O'Neill who authorized the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002, which revealed the direct links between the Al-Qaeda, Al-Taqwa, Hamas, and Saudi elite funding sources and the Republican Party and the Bush administration, and the point of intersection between the Bush administration's fiscal policies and the Islamist and Islamo-fascist link to the Republican Party, Grover Norquist. Financial Times 5/29/2003 had the following article at the top of the front page. This article is by Perrone Despeignes, D-E-S-P-E-I-G-N-E-S, in Washington. It's headlined, "Report Warns of Chronic U.S. Deficits." And for those of you out there that can understand basic arithmetic, here are some very scary numbers indeed. Check this out. The Bush administration has shelved the report commissioned by the Treasury Department that shows that the U.S. currently faces a future of chronic federal budget deficits totaling at least $44,200,000,000,000 in current U.S. dollars. The study, the most comprehensive assessment of how the U.S. government is at risk of being overwhelmed by the, quote, baby boom, unquote, generation's future health care and retirement costs, was commissioned by then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill. But the Bush administration chose to keep the findings out of the annual budget report for fiscal year 2004, published in February, as the White House campaigned for a tax cut package that critics claim will expand future deficits. The study asserts that sharp tax increases, massive spending cuts, or a painful mix of both are unavoidable if the U.S. is to meet benefit promises to future generations. It estimates that closing the gap would require the equivalent of an immediate and permanent 66% across-the-board income tax increase, skipping down. Mr. O'Neill, who was fired last December, refused to comment. The study's analysis of future deficits dwarfs previous estimates of the financial challenge facing Washington. Here are some more numbers, by the way, in addition to the total budget deficits of $44,200,000,000,000. You like those numbers? You'll love these. It is roughly equivalent to 10 times the publicly held national debt. 4 years of U.S. economic output, or more than 94% of all U.S. household assets. Alan Greenspan, Federal Reserve Chairman, last week bemoaned what he called Washington's deafening, unquote, silence about the future crunch. The estimates reflect the extent to which the annual deficit, the national debt, and other widely reported backward-looking data are becoming archaic and misleading as measures of the government's solvency. Mr. Smetters, now a University of Pennsylvania finance professor, said tax cuts were only a fraction of the imbalance, and that the bigger problem, quote, is the whole budget language we're using, unquote. Lawrence Kotlikoff, an expert on long-term budget accounting, alleged in a recent Boston Globe editorial that the Bush administration suppressed the research to ease passage of the tax cut plan. Again, as Paul Krugman noted in his column of May 27th, to have stated the obvious up until just a short time ago was to be accused of spreading conspiracy theories. And I have heard that charge in the past. But again, this is simply the obvious. One of the points that I've made in a number of different broadcasts, including For the Record 366, and For the Record 372, is that a decent historical analogy could be constructed between the behavior of the French power elite in the run-up to World War II, in which they basically saw a German defeat as essential for the destruction of French democracy, and the behavior of the American power elite, or at least significant elements of it. There are notable exceptions, such as Warren Buffett, Barry Diller, sharply criticized the impending consolidation of media resources. There have been some voices of integrity, but not enough. I have noted in the past the structural economic links between the Third Reich and between German industrialists and financiers and their French counterparts, and the fact that these structural economic connections, as well as ideological affinity, led to the deliberate subversion of France in the run-up to World War II. For the Record 366 and For the Record 372 discuss that, and I'm going to review a passage from a book published in 1944 by Ziff Davis. This is a hardcover book. The book is called The Triumph of Treason. It was authored by Pierre Cot, last name C-O-T. He was the French Minister of Aviation from 1936 to 1938 under the Social Front of Léon Blum, and he documented in extraordinary fashion how the French power elite deliberately subverted France in the run-up to and World War II itself, and then in particular he emphasizes the military subversion. I've talked about the fascist coup that took place, or the attempted fascist coup in France in 1938. That's in Why Johnny Can't Identify El Duce. I believe that's Miscellaneous Archive Show M61. It might be M60. I'm operating from memory. But note this passage, which talks about, it summarizes the deliberate subversion of France. And this took place at an economic and a political level and a military level. And I would encourage people to hunt down this book in a used bookstore and read about just how exactly the lightning conquest of France by Germany took place. And I would note that the economic control of corporate France by corporate Germany did not dissolve with the end of World War II, and that economically France has remained controlled by Germany, basically a client state of Germany. We are going to be the same thing. From the Triumph of Treason. Again, this is 1944 that Pierre Coe was writing. Enough evidence has been published already to prove that France was stabbed in the back by those who saw in Adolf Hitler the new Saint George who would slay the communist dragon. When Pierre Lazareff, former editor-in-chief of Paris Soir, the French newspaper with the widest circulation, reports royalists as saying, quote, "We need the defeat to wipe out the Republic," unquote. When Elie Bois, former editor of the Petit Parisien, the most influential political newspaper, reports great industrialists as admitting to him during the winter of 1939 and 40 that a plot had been organized to replace the democratic regime by a government of authority, unquote, and that this plot presupposed a Nazi victory. When Anatole de Monzy writes in a book passed by the censor of the Vichy government that Maréchal Pétain, head of the Vichy government, said in February of 1940, quote, "They will appeal to me in the third week in May," unquote. When Geneviève Tabouy tells of the work accomplished in the Parisian salons by the 5th Column's Brigade Mondaine. When Henri de Kerelly, former officer and nationalist deputy, exposes the inroads of the 5th Column in the conservative and military circles which he knew. When Henri Torres reveals to us what was going on in the offices of the official propaganda, we have every reason to accept their affirmations, which tally so perfectly with the events. Pierre Coe writing in 1944 about France in the run-up to World War II. Inside two of the program, we're going to continue with a discussion of offshore banking, its link to Saddam Hussein and to the Al-Qaeda milieu, the Al-Taqwa milieu, and its links to the American corporate power elite. But that'll be inside two. WFMU archiving the shows on Real Audio, streaming programs at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older broadcasts for download only at a longer URL linked both to that address and to spitfirelist.com. There will be a detailed, annotated article-length description of For the Record program number 412 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website within roughly a week of the airing of this program. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 412 titled "The Engineer Intends to Wreck the Train," being recorded on June 2nd of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.